Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. When I was a teenager, one of my dad's farming acquaintances was a fellow we called the Philosopher. He used to buy some of our wool and the odd lamb or two. We called him that because that's what he was. Oh, he was clearly a farmer and a marketer, but he trained as a philosopher, got the PhD and all, and he decided to practice his philosophy on the farm. And he claimed that most of what he needed to know about how to be a farmer and how to learn from his farm and his experience had been covered in his education. He wired his house, for example, using the principles he'd learned in his logic classes, and it passed inspection, no problem. So the idea of philosophy fitting in with farming is not foreign to me. It's just that the people I talk to don't really go on about the link between those two skill sets. That is, until this next interview.
If you go in at pursuing money, forget it. This is not where you go to make money, but this is where you can go to have a life. Do what you love doing, and you won't know when you're working, when you're playing, when you're studying. It's all happening at the same time. We treat food as if we want it easy, we want it served to us, and it better be top quality, and oh, by the way, it better be organic, and it better be all the things I want it to be.
In one view, philosophy is more of an attitude than a body of abstract knowledge. On the farm, philosophy asks fundamental questions about how we come to know something and how we can learn from our experience, the value of listening to nature, of knowing your land and soil intimately, the importance of fully understanding your role in the food system. And in all of this, there is an appreciation of what we could call the sacred. Does that make the idea of a philosopher farmer sound more down to earth? Today, we're in central Newfoundland. We head north out of Lewisburg on Route 340 toward Twillingate. You've likely already seen the signs for the Campbellton Berry Farm. Just past Michael's Harbour, you'll notice the large geodesic dome that looks like a strawberry turn into the parking lot. We're in a busy farmer's market, a new building, bright and airy and full of local products. It's quite busy, which means it's a tad noisy as well. But that is the sound of community.
Phil Thornley. I'm in Campbellton, or very close to Campbellton, because it's a little bit outside, on a farm that my father and I started in 1979, and we're in a new farm market that we've just put up in the last year, sitting at a table that we cut from the woods.
It's a beautiful table, too, I must say. I think if you put them downstairs and put a price tag on them.
Well, we have, and we did.
We sold. You sold some. That's entrepreneurship. Do you remember when you decided you were going to be a farmer?
Yeah, I was in university, and I decided I wanted to stay in Newfoundland, because we did have an opportunity to go to New Zealand or somewhere else. There's jobs I could have taken. Yeah. And so we discussed it, and we decided if everybody leaves Newfoundland, then the place is doomed. And we like our families, you know, we don't really want to. So we decided, no, we'd stay. And then you start looking around for something to do.
For a lot of people, they might not have thought of farming as a way to stay in Newfoundland.
Yeah, why farming? Because no one was doing it. My father was an engineer and not particularly religious. My mother was a church organist, not particularly religious either, but her father was a gardener in England on an estate, and he was a master gardener. And she had a love of plants, flowers, good fruit. And when my parents were at home during the war, they grew a victory garden. Yeah. So I think I was trying to put all of the people and all of the things together. My wife loved berry picking. She loved Newfoundland. Yeah. She enjoyed family events. She was very good at finding a right path and sticking to it in spite of everything else. Yeah. So it was Pliny the Elder in about 80 BC. I got to blame it on him. He said he went around the then known world, which was the Mediterranean, and he said, where farming is, all the arts follow. And that gives a clue as to how you could bring all these disparate abilities and passions and everything else together in one spot. Because farming was the basis for all of those. And if you think about it, he's quite right. Hmm. Once you've got a plot of land, and this gets inundated with a flood every year, you got to know where your boundaries are. So you better know something about mathematics and geometry and surveying. Yeah. If you're going to plant rows of crops, you better know how much seed you need, where it goes, yeah. you know. And so the mathematical arts and the geometric arts are all there. And then you're going to need to be clothed and fertility and animal husbandry. And then when you get a complete disastrous failure, well, the gods are to blame. So now you better bring song and dance and feasting and and sacrifice and religion into it. And without farming, who cares? Okay, let's just shoot something with a bow and arrow in the woods. And
you're making it sound like agriculture is the civilizing influence.
It is, absolutely. It absolutely is. Because if you are tied to a plot of land, you have to get on with your neighbor. You can't pick up and say, well, I'm just going to move 20 miles away and I'll get rid of them. Yeah. You know, you better work it out. Absolutely, it's the basis of civilization. Yeah.
Well, I have to say that thus far, when asking that question about how you got into it, I've never really had this kind of a response, which is very refreshing.
Well, I think it's interesting. But I think farmers do like to try and put things together because they have to. You know, they better understand something about what's going on or they're not going to be successful farmers, especially in Newfoundland.
I should ask you then, you went into farming with very strong kind of sense of the value of it as an influence. Have you felt that as you farmed over the years?
Yes. If you go in at pursuing money, you forget it. This is not where you go to make money, but this is where you can go to have a life.
Yeah.
Because in order to do farming, there's so many different things that you've got to bring together that it will take you out of yourself. You can't just pursue one narrow range of interests because every time you'll get knocked back. Something will take you out.
Yeah.
Oh, what's wrong with your sheep? Okay, you better understand something about, you know, medicine. Or if you're going to pursue it, it's going to take you out.
Yeah. So this time of year, we come here and there's wonderful raspberries, strawberries, NSCAP, and so on. But I get a sense that you want people who come here to have an experience beyond just picking up some berries or whatever.
Exactly.
What are you trying to create for those who drive in?
What they already have and they don't know. What a community has and it undervalues. The fact that you can walk out of most small communities and go berry picking in the hills, that is extremely valuable. And we treat it as casually as nothing. We treat food as if we want it easy, we want it served to us, and it better be top quality, and oh, by the way, it better be organic, and it better be all the things I want it to be. So the tendency and the commercial thrust is to say, get it easily, get it cheaply, get it, you know, just what you want, this is ethical, this is organic, this is good for you, but they haven't thought about what it means to have good food. They haven't thought that the very fact we eat requires a sacrifice. Yeah. Something has to die to feed us. I don't care if you're vegetarian or whatever. Something dies to feed us. We have to kill something to feed us.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that occurred to the Beothuks when they were here. They would have wept over the deer they shot with their arrows. And, you know, they had to get to know an animal in order to do that, to get that close. And by the time they tracked it and followed its habits and got to know it, and now we have to turn around and kill it in order to feed us? Well, you know, we better sing a song of praise to the gods that be for having gifted us with the life. And that's completely forgotten in a supermarket. You know, it's a slab of meat on a tray, or it's a bunch of strawberries in a basket, and the purchase agent who's making that decision about which one will he buy is looking 99% of the time at price. Nothing else.
So a child going out into the yard here sees some chickens, asks, what are those?
Yeah.
Chickens. Is that related to what I eat?
Exactly.
It's a lesson.
Chickens.
Yeah.
Eggs. Everything out there is edible. You know?
Yeah.
But they invariably fall in love with it. And then if that dawns on them what they have to do just to sustain their own life, they'll realize that there's this is a sacrament. This is something that we've got to have a lot more respect for than a slab of meat on a tray or even a quart of strawberries in the store. And in small communities where it was subsistence farming, they knew darn well just how important their food was. And they knew what a gift it was. And we need to get that sense back that this is food for the body and food for the soul. And that we can't approach food as anything but a sacrament and a sacrifice.
Just recently I had a conversation with somebody who said that if you can raise animals and kill them and not feel anything, something's wrong.
Yes, exactly.
It's that interesting connection between understanding the sacrifice and as certain life goes on.
Yeah, and when you take and make an 8-to-5 job out of murdering animals, what have you done to the society where you've removed that from the rest of society? So they think now, I don't know what they think, some people think it's an entitlement, or it's not a sacrifice. This plate of food hasn't died to feed me. I'll just throw it in the garbage. We have to think hard about what kind of societies we want, because our production systems should be such that it humanizes and doesn't dehumanize.
Is there a song that I can use to put under this here and there?
Is it Tickle Cove Pond?
Yes.
Yeah. By eating plain food, we keep ourselves fit. And man is too stupid, dumb creatures to know.
Man is too stupid, dumb creatures to know.
Dumb. Well, they can't talk. They haven't got language, but they can.
Yeah.
If you can read that horse, he would tell you, I'm not going out there on that ice.
That's right.
Yes, you are.
It is a song about humans fighting nature.
About humans fighting nature. It's a Newfoundland song. It's about communities. They all got together and they got that pony out of the pond.
Yeah.
And they helped one another. And it's about nutrition.
Yeah.
And it's about how you live.
Yeah.
It's about your own impatience. It's about managing yourself. You know, if only I had listened
to
the horse.
And
the solution was right there. Today you take the long way around.
Which is what farming is all about.
Yeah.
Take the long way around.
In cutting and all in the ice and snow, we're up against troubles that few people know. And only by patience and courage and grit, and eating plain food can we keep ourselves fit. The hard and the easy we'll take as it comes, and when ponds freeze over we'll shorten our run. To hurry my all in spring coming on, near lost me my mare upon Tickle Cove Pond. Lay ho, William Mulford, lay ho, William White, lay hold of the cordage and pull all your might. Lay hold of the bowline and pull all you can, and give me a lift for poor Kit on the pond. I knew that the ice became weaker each day, but still took the risk and kept hauling away. One evening in April, bound home with the load, the mare showed some halting against the ice road, and knew more than I did as matters turned out. And lucky for me, I joined her in doubt. She turned round her head, and with tears in her eyes, as if she were saying, you're risking our lives. All this I ignored with a whip-handle blow, for a man is too stupid, dumb creatures to know. The very next minute the pond gave a sigh, and down to our necks went poor Kitty and I. For if I had taken wise Kitty's advice, I never would take a shortcut on the ice. Poor creature, she's dead, and poor creature, she's gone. I'll ne'er get my wood off of Tickle Cove Pond.
That's the trio Nightingale with the song Tickle Cove Pond. It was a request of my guest today, Philip Thornley. In this section, we start off by talking about environmental stewardship and coming to know your land.
You won an award for environmental awareness.
I saw that many years ago.
Yes. Which seems to relate to what you're talking about right now as well, in terms of your treatment of the land that grows your berries. Can you talk a bit about that?
If you want to get in touch with that, yes, you better treat this with respect. Then the land you're given, or the land that you manage to obtain, you better get some sense of what's there and what you can do with it, and what it'll grow, what it won't grow. You better work in harmony with it. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Because to do anything else is just at your peril. I mean, you just won't accomplish the job. And you can seem to do that by imposing something on something else. I do use some synthetic fertilizers. I do use some chemicals. I can't claim to be organic. But if I'm going to use that as a solution for all of my problems, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble because I have not respected what's there. I'm trying to grow something that I shouldn't be trying to grow. But these plants are smart and they're adaptive. If I go and put them in a raised bed and put drip irrigation and plastic over them, they behave differently. And you better figure out what are you doing to that plant by doing that, and what's the plant's response. And you can't force your will. The boss here is about a foot high, got a root system, and he has to tell me what to do. It's no sense in me going in there and just trying to force my will on the soil. Or the soil can change from, 10 yards on, it's a bog, and another bit in Newfoundland, it's sand and gravel, and then you're into bedrock. But if you think about that and work in harmony with what you've got, you can make a much better farm than that good soil that you can see from the CN Tower. You can. Much more interesting. Yeah. Much more food for the soul thing. And much better food. Interesting. Yeah. Enough.
So did you start out farming? It's been a lot of sort of trial and error, probably.
Oh, God. It still is. Okay. Yeah. Every year is an experiment.
Yeah.
You don't know what the weather's going to be like.
Yeah.
You don't know how the plant's going to respond.
Yeah.
So you just got to keep your eyes open, and hopefully you're aware enough to realize when they need what.
Yeah.
And you get soil tests and leaf analysis and everything else you need to help you along. And you read about the requirements of this creature you're trying to nourish. And you be observant, whether it's moisture sensors and temperature sensors or weather stations and wind velocity or whatever. That's way more interesting than going at soil with a recipe from a Guelph.
But are there things that you think we could do to make it easier for new farmers?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. There's a lot you could be doing. Well, the very first thing you could do is to be thankful for what's on your plate and realize where it comes from, and that something or somebody has sacrificed to give you that. So have some respect for your food. And that's happening. And the other thing is to think nature doesn't follow your ideas. I mean, you can say, I hate spiders, and you're going to run away from everyone. Or you can say, isn't that interesting? He's got 8 legs and he made that beautiful web and he's caught a fly. Wow. Are you going to withdraw from your environment, or are you going to embrace it? And that's really the crux of it. You're here wherever you are, and you can run away, or you can embrace the world the way it is and see the beauty in it and the nourishment that's in it and the relationships that you have with everything and everybody, and explore those. And I tell you, it's mind-blowing, and you couldn't live a richer life.
So a young farmer, you've got some land, let's say you've gone through that process, you'd say walk around, listen to it, figure out what...
And listen to yourself and to the people around you. What relationships do I have here? How can I nurture them and bring them along? How can I bring my own self along?
So you're talking about a relationship to food that maybe needs to start early on. Well, there are programs to work with children and school children and so on.
Absolutely.
What are some things that you see happening with that generation of those kids in school now? Is that where...
Oh, I think that's where we do have to reach them.
Yeah.
Farming in the classroom. That's a good idea. But if you think about it, if you restrict it to that, you're in trouble, because you cannot farm in the classroom.
No, it's difficult.
And it can start there. For absolutely. This little green thumb stuff and kids growing things is super. But let's remember what Pliny said: where farming is, all the arts follow. We've got to put people back together, and I really think we've been tearing people apart with the organizations we have, with the boxes we put things. This is education.
Yeah.
You know? This is work. Why can't it be both? This is play. Why can't it be all three all at the same time? There's a guy, Richard Bowles, who wrote a book called The Three Boxes of Life. When you're 5 years old, you're supposed to play all the time. Mm-hmm. When you're 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you're supposed to study like mad. And then you're supposed to work. And then when you're retired, you're supposed to go back to playing again. And you've forgotten how by that time, last time you played, you were 5 years old. And the way to get out of those boxes, do what you love doing. And you won't know when you're working, when you're playing, when you're studying. It's all happening at the same time, which is what a baby does as it learns. And it learns at a tremendous pace.
So when you're having a day here, you're learning, playing, and working at the same time.
Yeah, basically. All the same time.
It
never stops.
I notice even around here, you talked about the arts follow agriculture, and you've got quilts and things like that hanging. Yep. This is just a new building for you that we're in. That's a few weeks old. Do you have some visions for what else you want to put in here?
Yes and no. Yes, it's going to be local stuff produced in Newfoundland, and I'm going to value the treasures that my neighbors have, or the things they don't treasure yet, but their grandmother did, or their great-grandmother did. And you can see the neglect of things like dams and trees smothered in black knot that no one has cared for. Somebody brought those here. Somebody cared for them in the first place. Somebody valued their fruit. And people, once they taste them and taste the recipes that some of the people had for them, will love them too. But that's been the problem in Newfoundland. The local things we have are the most valuable. Our grandmothers and grandfathers knew cod liver oil you better take every morning.
Yeah. I like it, actually.
I do, too.
I like the taste.
Yeah, exactly. But those fats and oils and those things are at the basis of our health. At one time, we knew what our diet should be. And the nutrition that we got and the tastes we had were based on the nutritional value of the food, not someone extracting orange flavor and stuffing it in a, something that's nothing but sugar and then tricking you into thinking that you're getting nutrition somehow.
Yeah.
A modern apple has 10 times less nutritional value than the heritage varieties from, say, the 1920s. Yeah. And if you're going to have varieties bred to make money and not to feed people, then we deserve what we get. Well, black currants are something that's undervalued. But black currants, my grandmother had them in her yard, and she had them for a very good reason. They have a very high vitamin C content, and they're high in flavonoids for nutrition and health. And a spoonful of black currant juice would help you overcome the flu or a cold. We've gone astray, and we got to find our roots.
I raised an alarm you could hear for a mile, and neighbors turned up in a very short while. You can always rely on the old birds and whites to render assistance in all your bad flights. To help a poor neighbor is part of their lives, the same I can say for their children and wives. When the bowline was fastened around the mare's breast, William White for a shanty song made a request. There was no time for thinking, no time for delay. Straight from his head came the song right away. Lay hold, William Oldford, lay hold, William White. Lay hold of the cordage and pull all your might. Lay hold of bowline and pull all you can, and give me a lift for poor Kit on the pond. Lay hold, William Oldford, lay hold, William White, lay hold of the cordage and pull all your might. Lay hold of the bowline and pull all you can, and with that we brought Kit out of Tickle Cove Pond.
Tickle Cove Pond by Nightingale. I'm talking today to Philip Thornley, farmer, berry grower, entrepreneur, and philosopher, who puts those principles into practice on his farm. We start off this last section talking about the link between marine resources and terrestrial agriculture.
I think the land and the sea are complementary, and I mean, a lot of the trace elements that I need for my strawberry crop are right there in the ocean. It's just a matter of finding a way to extract them, whether you extract them with kelp and put that on. And a biological way is by far, far better than someone trying to do it in a chemistry lab.
What's your favorite crop that you grow?
Well, I think it would have to be the strawberries. But there's such problem children. Oh, they're different. And it's mainly because I'm trying to grow them in Newfoundland. And there's things like partridge berries and black currants and damsons. And we need some research on this stuff. There's black knot which hit damsons and destroy them. There's got to be a solution.
Is there a crop that you would like to grow next year, year after?
Well, I'd still like to think about what our grandmothers and grandfathers had in their yards, because they didn't try and grow anything that was too difficult. They wanted something that was reliable enough to feed them. And things like damsons, black currants, red currants, white currants, gooseberries. I was talking to a guy from Belgium that came down to the U-Pick and was picking, and he runs a nursery in Belgium. And when I showed him my black currants and gooseberries, he smiled and he said, I have 80 different varieties of black currants in my nursery. Why don't I know about that? Well, I do now. But B, okay, I want some. You know, let me try them out. It's our local things that we need to look at hard and think about and invest in that are going to pay off for us, I think. If we're going to import a fancy technology from somewhere else, well, it's all very well to import the technology, the ideas, but we better see how they're going to pan out for us locally. And is this going to make us more human? Is this going to make better communities? And some things we should reject. You know, if computers in the classroom are turning kids into little zombies, man, that's great technology and it'll do super things for us, but that's inappropriate use. Get it out of there. Get the kids outdoors. They've got a greenhouse outside or a field, and get them growing something. My four-year-old, when we went digging potatoes, she could hardly believe that here was this blue potato coming out of the dirt. And it was brilliantly blue, and she could... She just went right down the row. She had to dig up every last one of them. And that's what you want. That's the connection.
This is middle of the afternoon on a Tuesday. What do you do the rest of the day? What do you do first thing in the morning? What's the life of Philip the farmer?
Before you're going to do anything, you're going to manage yourself. And how many times have I had to tell myself that? If you can manage yourself, you can manage anything. And the other thing I have to tell myself is, look around you. The solution you need to your problem is right here. And I just have to laugh the number of times that's completely true. You know, a pump breaks down in the middle of frost control, and it's midnight and the temperature's dropping, and I know I'm going to lose $10,000 or $20,000 worth of crop. So here am I going bananas, right?
Yeah.
And I say to myself, man, if you can only manage yourself, look around. The solution is right here. And I look at the problem and I say, yeah, what do I need there? I need a wrench. I need a half-inch wrench on that. I didn't come out here with a half-inch wrench. Oh, you didn't? Go look at the truck. Sure enough, there lying under the seat was a half-inch wrench. Where did that come from? I don't know. It's all there. You know, when you get discouraged, when you're down and out, just manage yourself and look around. Solutions right there.
Philip, thanks
so
much.
Do you want to see anything on the farm?
Sure.
I've got a few minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Food as a sacrament and a sacrifice. When we are removed from the awareness of this, we lose our respect for food and for the people and natural processes that produced it. We take it for granted. We waste it without conscience. We're ignorant to the miracle of soil and nature and humans cooperating together to farm. When you think about it this way, you'll likely realize that there are actually a lot of philosopher farmers around. They just don't call themselves that. Maybe you're one of them. You know who you are. May you flourish. Remember, where farming is, all of the arts follow.
The very fact we eat requires a sacrifice. Something has to die to feed us. I don't care if you're vegetarian or whatever. Something dies to feed us. Where farming is, all the arts follow. Are you going to withdraw from your environment, or are you going to embrace it? You're here wherever you are, and you can run away, or you can embrace the world the way it is and see the beauty in it, and I tell you, you couldn't live a richer life.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was Tickle Cove Pond by a wonderful trio, Nightingale. They intertwined a couple of tunes with that song, Over the Ice and Kolfata. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by a family band called The Dwyers. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
Nature doesn't follow your ideas.